Light salute.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So, welcome everybody to the meeting, I'm going to put my microphone on or I'll get in trouble. To the meeting of the Government Operations Committee. And, so we'll do a roll count.
Okay, Chairman Morgan here. Councilmember Pepper here. Councilmember Dee. Absent.
I think I saw some minutes in draft form. Did you ever see any in?
Do we have minutes this evening or do we need to do the next one?
I think we need to do the next time after that. I think I saw some in draft form, but I don't think I saw them in. In form, so. Topics in this committee's scope and agenda items. Does anybody have any comment? Robert Taylor?
Robin Taylor, Black Diamond. I don't know.
Excuse me, would you like a chair? There's no chair.
Well, this is fine. This is fine. It's just blinding is all. I don't know if you're going to be holding discussion on the separate agenda items when they come up, so I don't know how
it
you're...
It would be good to talk to us now, yes, please.
Okay. Again, Robin Taylor, Black Diamond. Before I get to any of the comments on the agenda, as far as your scope of the committee scope goes, we do a lot of city council rules stuff, things like that in here. I think it would be a good idea, since this committee covers public safety and fire, since the city is facing a lack of fire services in Old Town, and that is something this city is going to have to remedy sooner than later. I think it would be a good idea if this committee added that to their work program and future agendas so that it was a standing item for people to speak to, give ideas for. We're going to have to come up with a fire station. We're going to have to come up with land for a fire station. We are going to have to come up with fire equipment. We are going to have to come up with money. So since that falls under the scope of this committee, I suggest that this get put on the agenda sooner than later and start having conversations about it on a regular basis. It should not be something that is just brought up once in a while when maybe somebody or something crosses that subject.
I noticed, Robin, that fire safety in that second block on the agenda page.
The committee's work scope?
Under agenda, that's on the third line down.
Uh-huh, fire safety.
Fire safety mm-hmm. in there. Mm-hmm. And your point is well taken. I do try to add on some different things. for discussion, whether it's before the council or not, because I think that it's important.
Yeah. I think this is a subject that needs to be on here regular so that people see it and begin to think maybe something's going on there we need to pay attention to.
Right. And I think it might have been when you were out of town. I'm not 100% certain, but we did have the fire chief come and talk
to us. I was here at that meeting. Yes. Yeah.
In the past. It's true. Have you got any special, you're thinking about mostly, how should we call this? Come up to standard or Old Town's fire station or?
Fire services for the Old Town section or improved fire response. It could be new fire station / land / apparatus, how to fund. I mean, it could be, it's a big issue, and it's not something that, it's something that we need to be having fairly regular discussions on. At least if people are seeing it on the agenda, they might begin to think we need to go and have some input or speak to it or hear what's going on. It needs to be something that's in front of the public. Often.
Yes, I agree.
Okay.
I agree. And my other question would be, are you attending fairly regularly that open hoc, ad hoc meeting at the fire?
I didn't make it to the last one in time before it was over. Oh, they'd already adjourned. I got there too late for it. I had a previous engagement.
I was trying to make sure that someone went. The trouble is that we're not hearing back from those people who went. And I see that as an issue, and it'd be an issue that's worth complaining about, I think.
Well, I think they're kind of in a place where they're just kind of batting around ideas on their pre-annexation agreement right now. But the conversation that I'm speaking about is one that does not entail Fire District 44. It's about what the city has to do prior to if we vote to annex into District 44.
Right, and I'm kind of cutting you off, but I'm glad you said that because it reminded me because I was asking the fire chief what to do. Mm-hmm. And the fire chief told me, well, what you need to do is you need to find that plan. I did find the plan. I think I probably lost the one
that he had here?
Yeah, he says everything you need to do and everything you need to know is in this plan.
Yes, it is.
So I think that would be a good place to start. And when we get some room on our agenda, we'll just have to add that in.
Okay. So I want to talk about, I don't know that these got resolution numbers. On here, it would be item 3.
Can I show you something? Doing this because your words stuck in my head.
I won't swear this could always happen, but this will be the AB agenda bill number.
Okay. So this would be 16-032, the Robert Edelman one. I was reading in your, I listened to your whereases as I listened to the audio. And a date caught my mind, and it was the whereas at the bottom of the first page. It says answer from the city was due on March 10th, 2016. And I just wanted to point out that on March 3rd council meeting, the agenda that came out had an executive session on there regarding this pending legislation or litigation, because an answer had to be in by March 10th. So the executive session was apparently to poll the council and find out what the city attorney was supposed to answer. That got canceled, supposedly because the recycling event got added on, and you guys didn't like that, so you canceled the meeting, and you rescheduled to the day before, which was Wednesday the 2nd. And even though there is the executive session on there, because legal counsel had another meeting to be at that evening, she was unavailable for the one on the 3rd, so she did not have counsel's direction for March 10th. So your whereas is lead into on March 10th, you know, answer from the city was due on March 10th, and then the second whereas, or the first whereas at the top of the second page says, instead of filing an answer in defense of the city attorney entered agreement with Mr. Edelman to dismiss the lawsuit without prejudice. But on March 28th, the whereas below that, it says that they signed this stipulation. You make it sound in your whereas is that on March 10th, she entered this agreement with Mr. Edelman, when in fact, she had no direction from counsel on what counsel wanted to do at that time. I think that your whereases are a bit misleading. In that it makes it seem like it's all her, and in fact it isn't. The fact of the March 10th issue was directly because of the council canceling the March 3rd meeting.
As I recall, there was an extension.
Okay.
And that's why it comes up again. And then there was an extension. I can't remember who asked.
Well, your whereases are misleading, even if you knew there was an extension, because it makes it sound like the answer was due on March 10th, and instead of answering in the city's defense, she signed a stipulation.
Well, that is indeed what she did. When she did...
She didn't do it on March 10th,
yeah.
Apparently, if there was an extension.
In the end, that's what she did.
Well, your whereas leaves it wide open for anybody to interpret, which is not honest.
Thank you for pointing that out. We'll take a good look at it.
Okay, we'll see. Okay. I thought I had something else here. Oh, I did have a question. Since the lawsuit is no longer on right now, and I figure maybe you can answer this. I was remembering that in the minutes of January 7th, when you were bringing your committee assignment amendments, that you had five committees with two members each on each committee. And I printed it up this evening, so it's right here. But when you came back on the 21st, you had changed from five committees to three. And you went from two members on each committee to three members on each committee. Why was that? What changed between January 7th and January 21st?
The meeting on January 7th.
I don't know why the meeting on January 7th would change the number of committees and the number of people on the committees. I don't know how would that have any bearing?
It had bearing because we could see, we had always intended to go to the quorum committees. It had bearing because there wasn't any reason to hold that back at that time. It was a jump over. That was a plan.
So what you're saying is that the January 7th that you brought was kind of like a placeholder, and down the road you were going to change them anyway.
It wasn't. If you read the rest of the language in there, it said that we suggested these committees, and review of the council rules.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
Possibly if the meeting had gone differently on January 7th, possibly we wouldn't have taken the tack that we did. I don't know. I guess I still
don't see the connection between how the meeting went on the 7th to changing the committees to three with quorums. I don't see how a council meeting affects standing committee assignments and number of committees. There's a disconnect there, and
there's
I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, I can understand that there's a disconnect in your mind.
No, it's not in my mind. It's in the facts. I don't understand how chocolate milk leads to white milk.
Our presider at the January 7th meeting.
The mayor, yes.
Had developed a pattern by the end of the meeting where if her presentation was not going to be rubber stamped, she was going to pull the agenda item off the table. And her attorney was aiding and abetting her in doing that, which means that there is no other voice except that presider's voice. And so for council business to have a forum where it could operate is the reason that we went to the different forum. The quorum form of committees. I'm getting in a tricky place here because I know from the mayor's point of view and people who listen to her point of view, it sounds like we were taking her prerogative to run her city away. We were not. We've never wanted to take her prerogative to run her city away. But we have wanted to take our prerogative as the legislators back.
Well, I can understand that because that's what the other councils did as well. That's what the other councils did as well with Becky Olness. But they voiced the committees they wanted to be on. They made those decisions ahead of time, but they kept the five committees and they kept two council members on each one. So I still am not seeing why a quorum is necessary, and that leads into my other question is, why is it important to have a quorum on the standing committee? What does a quorum do that two people can't? I'm not seeing the philosophy behind having a quorum. What, because frankly, you've never had a quorum on your committees since you started them. So what are your fictional three on the committee, because one person is, there's only two here. What are they getting done that two people on the committee can't get done?
These committees have legislative authority by their structure in the rest of their rules.
Which means you can take action on stuff, correct?
No. Well, it means that we can take action in the form, we can't take final action. It means that we can take action in the form that's allowed under the OPMA, which is exactly what we wanted to do.
And what action is that?
We can take testimony. We can listen to you talk. We can offer amendments.
And you couldn't do that with two? Is that what I'm understanding? With two people, you can't? If you got less than a quorum, you can't do that?
No, because the parent structure of the committee is different. The committees that we had when we had the mayor's committees under the mayor's system were, they couldn't do any legislative acts. They could listen to material, they could offer staff suggestions, but they couldn't do any legislative acts like taking testimony, listening to people, offering thoughts. And they also didn't have the same responsibility to do research that the legislative committees do.
Well, I don't believe that's true. You know, my husband, former council member Ron Taylor, was very heavily vested into the Public Safety Committee.
I know.
And he did a lot of research, plus his own personal background and knowledge and expertise. So I think to say, and plus the Financial Committee with Janie, and I don't know who else was on it, might have been Carol before she became mayor, they do a lot of research and looking into stuff going back and forth. So I don't know, I'm still at a loss as to figure out why you have to have a quorum on your committees and what, because you've never had a quorum.
Well, here. the reason we do is because these legislative committees are set up differently. We can't substitute a different council person on a legislative committee. Those legislative committees can only have the council people that they have, which is one of the reasons why if one of us gets sick or is gone for some reason, those meetings, these meetings get canceled since the third person isn't here, because only the people who are on the legislative committee can be here. And part of that is in this OPMA rule. And as I was thinking about that today, one of the things is that any and every and all council members can come to these committee meetings, just in the same way, I don't know if you remember this, but in the same way that the whole council could go to the hearing examiner hearings. They just were not to communicate with each other. If you could listen to it on tape, you could be at the meeting if you wanted to be, under the law. And that was a case. Actually, it was a case that our attorney, Catherine George, won over in San Juan County, because they had a case where that had been going on for a long time, and the judges ruled that was okay. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason why we have three people on the committee. Two is a quorum, and three people are on the committee in case somebody can't make it, because we can't just stick someone else in there on these committees, because they're standing council committees and they have a little different thing in the law than a council meeting two at a time in the mayor's committees.
Okay, well, I'll thank you for these. I'll cogitate on all of that.
Thank you. We'll cogitate on it too, and thanks for your suggestions. So, anybody else have something? Okay. Oh, here, I'm nearly forgetting. I had a phone call from Judy Carrier. And she also had some questions and thoughts that she read out to me last night that I promised I would share. And let's see. The first thing she asked about was where the Civil Service Commission is and a little bit about it. And she and I started talking about it a little bit, like I have talked about it in the past. And I realize the Civil Service Commission is a really different cat. And one of the reasons that I'm suggesting that we go over its rules is because the rules that we have don't seem to me to be colloquialized for our locality, and the most learned paper that I find on the Civil Service Commission says that is probably the most important thing. And I also, people don't really know what the Civil Service Commission is about and what it does. And this is kind of interfering with the quality of life of our citizens in a certain way. And I'll just tell you this story right before this came up, because I was driving up from Four Corners to Black Diamond, and in my rearview mirror, there's this car behind me careening all over the street. Goes off on the shoulder and across the white line, and it's just going back and forth and back and forth, and it was disturbing me enough that I pulled off the road. And when I pulled off the road and this car went past me, it was a Black Diamond cop car. And I thought, oh, well, now what do I do? So I followed the Black Diamond cop car into this parking lot up here, and I watched him get out of his car, and I kept asking him if he was all right. And then I thought, well, I don't really know what the next step is. I told him that the reason that I followed him, and I said, I'm not, you know, this is done now. I told you what I have observed, and he explained to me that he was trying to, oh, there she is. He explained to me that he was trying to type to his colleagues in his computer as he was driving. And I thought to myself, okay, well, I think I said enough. And I went home, and 2 or 3 weeks later, well, a week later, and started reading this stuff about the Civil Service Commission, and there is, and I'll bet nobody knows about it, there is something that you can do about that. There is a person, a contact person, working at the city, where you can, you know, I don't think I'd do it on a first thing like that, but if I saw it happening or heard about it happening again, since I'm sitting on the city council, I probably would call that person and tell her what I had observed. That is what you're supposed to do. And when we get into the civil service, you'll see why that's a process for public to use. It's supposed to separate the public political and the actual from each other somewhat. And it's protection for the police, and it's protection for the public, both. So, Judy, I'm sort of starting on your notes. Do you want them back?
No, you can go forward. You know,
I can go forward.
Mine are ready, and I'll follow.
Okay, so the L lawsuit, and
were you going to have her make a public comment at this time on her comments?
Well, she said,
Councilmember Morgan.
I would actually prefer that she would do it, but I can't. She won't be able to read my notes.
Oh, I don't even know if I can read my notes, but I didn't expect to speak. I just called you ahead of time so that if you want to make changes, just a second.
Okay.
That might be slow and pokey.
Well, that's okay.
You want slow and pokey?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, you talked about the civil service thing, what that was. And the only thing I have a note here, and I wasn't here, so you may have covered this is a little bit, is what the duties of civil service people are.
The way I'm going to answer that is we're gonna compare our civil service rules and procedures with the definitive, the Stephen DiGiulio trustees on the whys and wherefores of all of that. That's what we're going to do. We'll try to find somebody who, a person who works with the civil service or who has been on the committee to give some kind of a feeling for it. And we're working. I'm trying to work with the city to see if we can maybe get somebody from the city staff. But there's this issue about keeping things separate from each other, and so I want to be sure that I don't crowd that issue inadvertently in a way that it shouldn't be crowded, but it'll be, you know, when we go through this, it'll be defined a lot. Okay.
Okay.
I have a note here for, that I don't have any numbers. Did you speak to that? The numbers that were in the packet online just were 16 for 2016 dash and no number yet. So what I've got in my notes is the first resolution that was listed in the agenda, the second, the third.
Well, yeah, that's fine.
Down agenda. Yeah. So I'm looking at that the second resolution. And I had just put a note that, and that has to do with the Edelman lawsuit. And I just feel it's too bad that we don't have a definitive decision on the merits of all of the things that Mr. Edelman put in his the questions to the judge, if we want to put it that way. He wanted a judgment from the judge, that's what I had understood. Okay. As far as Resolution 3, the legality of standing committees, Cub Scouts. I have a note about insurance coverage. There's been a lot of talk about early on, the insurance people were saying, oh, there's a real problem with a lot of risk here. And I think I didn't totally understand at the time I first heard that. I still haven't totally understood it. But as far as standing committees and the way they have members and that kind of thing, I made a note that it would be something to know exactly where do we stand right now with the city's insurance, because of course nobody wants the city to be at risk for anything. I think that is almost already been discussed.
I think I need to answer you right smack.
Oh, go for it.
Right,
go for it.
About that. What happened with the city's insurance is absolutely nothing. And the reason is because once the risk manager for the city's insurance read not just the particular out-of-context bits that had been shared to him by his friend, Attorney Morris, once he read the whole thing, actually about the changes in the council rules, the changes in the council rules were completely endorsed by him as being legal and actually encouraged in the book that he brought to us, the Association of Washington Cities book that he brought us, encouraged us to make the changes, many of the changes that we made. He had a few questions that are also questions that I have about the way we were handling the minutes, et cetera, about executive meetings. And the reason for that was not just Black Diamond Born, but it's something that they've been working at a little bit at the state, and the MRSC has developed in the last year, I think, can say quite safely, a checklist that says what can be said about what went on in the executive session, and that said that it also advises who can be in the executive session, whether or not an attorney is there, and it's sort of like a checklist. There's about 13 reasons that you can go into executive session now out of the public view, and it has these 13 reasons, like boxes you check on the sheet, and then the clerk's supposed to sign it and date it at the bottom. And that's what they want to have filled out with the minutes. So, and we assured him that when we get ready to go a revamp, that that will try to take care of those issues for them.
Okay. Okay, I guess that's it for four.
Okay.
proper noticing of council agendas. I wrote several things. I don't see that we have any problem with that now. We've been noticing them as far as how they're to be, what it's supposed to say, that it's a council meeting, a special council meeting, as well as a committee meeting. And that is just one of the issues, but I think that's been covered and we're doing okay with that.
And we're trying to get better. It's a little bit cumbersome as we work our way through.
Yeah. The agenda. This is the agenda. This is not the meetings. This is the agenda.
I
apologize for that. I had some thoughts about the deadlines, so that there are plenty of days ahead, so that both the council and the mayor have an opportunity to approve the agenda, and I think I said that to you last night. That was one of the things. Did you want to speak to that? I know that the 9 days has always been in my head for a very long, many years.
Okay.
Many years, 9 days.
We have two issues here.
Yes.
One is that the regular council meetings, we have a tradition in the city of Black Diamond that we try to get the agenda to the approval stage 9 days before the meeting. And if we're going to use these, it makes it pretty tight. And it depends a little bit on when the committee meetings are. If we're going to use that agenda then to advance or hold back agenda items, the committee meetings have to happen, you know, before. So for the schedule as it's going to be, so for April 21st council committee meeting, this is the 14th today. We will decide what items are coming out of this committee, and we'll do the best we can to get them to Brenda's email before noon tomorrow, which is Friday, and she will try to and approve that meeting agenda, and then she will try to get those packets together by 5:30 or so in the evening. And it's pretty tight.
Yeah.
For the council committees, the standing committees, the RCW is currently our drop-dead target, and the RCW says that we have to have those packets together, well, we have to have those meetings noticed and the packets together 24 hours before the meeting happens. We're trying to get them up before then, but then we also have just that 1 week in between. And it's, you know, we may not have to have so many of these committee meetings as we figure out how to work with the system a little bit better, and as the city staff starts to figure out what the timing is. I mean, just hearing it and just seeing it and even having it on a piece of paper in front of you or on a calendar, heck, I've worked with that kind of stuff and it doesn't always work for you, you know? If you're trying to get a job done and you have things that you need to have scheduled in. So it's been a little bit fits and starts, but I think everybody is trying to work it out.
Yeah, I understand.
I hope.
Yeah, and that's the goal. That's the goal.
That's the goal.
And it's good to know the difference between the two.
The
regular council meeting agenda and committee agenda.
Right, and of course, The council meeting, the RCW rule for the council meeting, it actually, the council meeting, this is one thing that we're trying to avoid. And it's one thing that's sort of a sticking point. The agenda for the council meeting can get approved at the council meeting.
Yes.
And that has been happening a lot, yeah. And it was happening towards the end of last year more and more. There was more and more stuff being put on our table that we hadn't ever seen before. And so part of this is trying to get a little handle on that. Because I feel like, I always felt like, you know, it's hard enough for people who are on the council who made this commitment to the city. But for public to come up and say something worth listening to, they need to have just a few minutes to think about it before they come, you know, and maybe look something up or whatever it takes to collect their thoughts about things that they feel heavily about one way or another. And so I wanted them to have a little bit more forewarning. And the truth of the matter is, if you're at the council meeting, you should take one of those introduction slips. We're starting to understand that we need to write on those introduction slips when exactly that meeting is going to be for that item to come up, so that if you're at the council meeting, you can kind of note that in your head, and it'll go on a sheet. Now, we're not gonna try to tell the secretary clerk what she has to do as her job. So in the meantime, we're going to be scrambling around trying to get these together, and they probably won't come out as part and parcel of the agenda packets.
Mm-hmm. But there's a whole, I understand, there's a whole lot still going on trying to get into the groove, into the smooth running, and it's coming along, but there's still things. I will comment on what you said. So in my instance, just, you know, I realize everybody's different, but I saw what the agenda was going to be. Mm-hmm. And I saw the first one come out, and then the second one that came out and went bing, 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 oh my. And so I went to the packet. Just trying to find the packet for me has been difficult. I find the website difficult. That may be me, because I may be the inept computer person, but I do know a lot about computers, just maybe not website things, I don't know. But time, what I'm talking about is the time to go, find the packet, get going and starting to read, and then say, and trying to comprehend, because resolutions and things are written in legal-ish language, and saying, well, wait a minute, and I have a thought on that. So this time what I did is do just exactly what I'm reading, kind of back to you, resolution one, resolution two. This is what I'm wondering about. This is what I'm wondering about. Not knowing whether it was anything I would come here to talk about. You and I had other personal business elsewhere, you know, and I called you about that. Then we got talking about different things, and I'm kind of surprised to be sitting here going back over it, but so here you go. But it took time. It took thinking. People need that. I guess the other comment I was going to make is I remember way back, years ago, 2010, 2011, going to council meetings and seeing the council being presented with things, and they hadn't had any information at all. I wasn't understanding a lot about city business and government at that time either, so I can't comment so much on that, but I know I had the thought going through my head, well, these people are not even familiar with the details of this, whatever it might have been. And that's why I'm very much interested in what is happening here in the change, so that people who are interested and have a concern here, a concern there, different people, different times, can actually look at stuff, study it up, and feel comfortable to come in and say, what about that? And I appreciate this opportunity just for me. I'm not positive because I didn't go back and look, but I think it is resolution four may have a typo in the date at the bottom where it's signed. I just mentioned that.
Yes, it says May 21, which hasn't happened yet.
It
means January 21.
Okay. So I just mentioned that.
The Scrivener's.
Yes. Resolution 5, proper noticing by the mayor, timeline. Oh, I think I was wondering, okay, we kind of talked about the mayor approving or and the council approving agenda items. No, approving the notice. I keep mixing them up, I'm sorry. The notices that go out. My understanding is that the mayor will have business that she knows of, that the council doesn't know of, that she will want to have on the agenda. Council will have certain things they will want to have on the agenda. And that there is a, you want to speak to that?
Yeah, I will speak to that. It is the council's meeting. We have a strong mayor, form of government in this town. It is the council's meeting. The council sets its own agenda. The mayor sets her agenda with her staff. If the mayor wants something on the agenda, she needs to find some council member who will sponsor it, because whatever comes on the agenda for the council has to be sponsored by a council member. And the truth of the matter is, if she can't find even one council member to sponsor an item, it's not going to pass anyway. Right?
Yes, that makes sense. and my last question there was, what about... I guess I think I kind of know the answer now, but when agenda items come up for the regular meeting, and I kept being confused by the 9 days ahead time, but stuff comes up in the city, things will happen in the city, it does in our lives, and you've got to change your calendar or decide and take care of things all of a sudden, and that those things too can be put onto an agenda at a council meeting.
Every rule can be changed. But one thing to remember, and this is also a really important thing to remember, between the council's job and the executive branch's job, they are really two different cats. The council's job is to set the policy and the control of money. But that's really what their job is. The day-to-day operations, the things that can come up, I need an answer right now, that's in the mayor's job. That's the executive's job. That's what their job entails. It's like a different thing. And yeah, there could be an emergency. There could be war, there could be a flood, there could, you know, be some kind of disaster. For those things, probably the meeting would probably be a telephone meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Between the council members, the law is very clear about that. It says you don't have to, you know, if the sewer lift station down there blew up one day, there probably would be all kinds of things that would need to be enacted about public health and all that. That would be stuff that would be handled on an emergency basis.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a different cat than what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. And 6, policies regarding the city newsletter and communications to the public. It has to do, like I said, these are very ratty notes. Oh, when I was reading those different resolutions, I was thinking, yes, there's this current situation that we are right now in Black Diamond and what's going on. But there will be future councils, future mayors, future, way down the road. And I think I made the comment to you, well, what about the future with what is happening with the decisions in the council rules, I think, in regard to things. Now, yeah, this is underneath six, which has to do with the newsletter, mm-hmm. but there was something there where I was thinking, well, okay, if you make this resolution, and I'm thinking of it as a unchangeable thing, and I believe you said, hey, every time there's a change in officers, on the council, or change in the mayor, or, well, council, we're talking council right now, so in the council, the council will go over the council rules and change council rules to suit the way they want to operate, and that it had been done. I forget how many different situations you were telling me how mm-hmm. it has been changed repeatedly in the near past, in the years in which we,
right.
Yeah, that the council rules can be changed, so not to worry about.
Yeah, it is a different concept because we also do ordinances at the council meetings.
Yeah.
Ordinances are changes in the municipal code. Resolutions, especially resolutions about how the council is going to operate its business. I view them more in the light of like New Year's resolutions. And actually the AWC book did too, and it invited and encouraged the new council to come in and change the rules, and with the idea that these people would be people who had been sort of studying what was going on and had dreamt up a better way or a way they'd like to try. And they are short, you know, they're not intended to go on forever and for different people and other times.
Yeah. The only other thing I have is the section 3 on number 6. The newsletter was to look at the date again, and I don't know if that was a typo or not. I have a note here. I may have gotten mixed up because by the time I got through 6, I was wearing out when I wrote these notes.
Okay. So you think...
So I don't know what this is.
So number, I'm just going to put Scrivener's and number 6. Look for
maybe
date. Okay, thanks.
And that's all.
Thanks.
Okay.
So now... let's see. Well, 7:30. I think we can go through this quite quickly. I've given Council Member Pepper the city's provisions for the civil service rules. And then I have the more expanded version from DiGiulio. And I don't like to start at the beginning of things, so I took a good look and tried to see if I could start somewhere other than the beginning with this, but it didn't make any sense. So we'll start at the beginning of this. So I will just, these general provisions, I think the first thing I'm going to do is just read through. There's 1, 2, 3, 4. There's 4 here, and I guess what I'd like to know is if these DiGiulio provisions match up with what's on our agenda. I mean, on what's in our. So it says general provisions, authority and application. These rules are promulgated pursuant to authority granted, and I'm going to read the RCWs because I don't think it's important right now. Civil service for city firemen and police, and in the city of Black Diamond, it will only be for police. These rules are applicable to proceedings before the Civil Service Commission and should be read in conjunction with the specific provisions referenced in the RCW chapter, and it happens to be chapter 41, which is the enabling ordinance providing for the civil service. Okay, and then scope and purpose. These rules govern the continuing administration of the civil service system. The purpose of these rules is to assure that the civil service system is administered in accordance with the charter and ordinances of the city, and that all proceedings before the commission are conducted in an orderly, fair, and timely manner. And then the next one is presumption of validity. The civil service system implemented by these rules substantially accomplishes the purpose of this referenced RCW chapter. Variation from state models are based on local conditions and are intended to maintain the purposes of the civil service system, merit selection, tenure, and an independent civil service commission. These rules are presumed to be valid and shall be upheld unless in direct conflict with the purposes of the referenced RCW chapter. And then there's a note here that I'm going to read, even though it doesn't really apply to us, because it says no county use of this provision should be guarded, because the county doesn't have the same kind of leeway as the city does. They have to use these rules more strictly. And then servability. If any provision of these rules or the application thereof to any person or circumstance is held invalid, such invalidity shall not affect other provisions or applications of these rules, which can be given effect without the invalid provision or application. And to this end, any section or word is declared to be servable. That just means that if there's a law that changes, the new law is complied with, I think. That's what that means. So, general comments to Rule 1. Jurisdiction. Over 30 years before the state of Washington adopted the first statute requiring cities to provide civil service for firefighters, the Supreme Court had already discussed the extent of the jurisdiction of a civil service commission. The occasions for the Supreme Court's analysis, the occasion for it was an attempted termination of a Seattle Police Department night clerk by the city's civil service commission. This night clerk's name, Essen, had been accused by members of the public of mistreatment of prisoners in the city jail. When the chief of police failed to act, the commission took it upon itself to terminate Essen's employment. Essen challenged the action. In its analysis, the court began by distinguishing the authority of the commission from that of the appointing authority. A decade earlier in the United States, the Supreme Court had occasion to consider a similar issue in upholding the president's power to remove executive branch officers. The court acknowledged the rule that the right of removal is together with the right to appoint, unless it's somehow limited by the Constitution or by a statute or law. In contrasting the appointing authority from commission authority, the Essen Court described generally the purpose and the functions, the purpose and the functions of civil service. So the object of the civil service regulations seems to be to provide a system for the selection of capable officers uninfluenced by the mere personal or political considerations. The test of efficiency is usually made by a system of examinations, such as the Civil Service Commission of the City of Seattle is authorized to conduct. These examinations relate to intellectual qualifications and perhaps some measure of other fitness in the way of personal character. As a result of the test, the commission prepares lists of names of those found to be qualified. And from such lists, the appointing officer selects and appoints selects and appoints. The function of the commission seems to be to recommend the appointment, but the actual appointment is another matter, is what the court said. The court acknowledged that the commission is to act as a check on the appointing officer to ensure that the employee is not removed based on mere personal, political, or other insufficient motives. Thus, the functions of the commission are such that the members thereof are evidently intended to be free from any consideration in connection with either appointments or removals, except those that are purely notorious. That they more fully discharge their duty in that spirit, and in that spirit, they are not given the power of either actual appointment or removal. This foundation has been carried forward in subsequent decisions. This cites a case in 1963. The statutes are clear that the civil service does not create positions or slots of employment. That authority rests with the government's legislative authority, acting through its budget and other administrative functions. Occasionally, there is conflict between the authority of a commission to classify positions and the authority of a government to create positions or to designate work. For example, each rank or position of employment in the government sector does not necessarily require a separate classification. An obvious example is that of a police department's assignment of a police officer to perform the job of a motorcycle officer. The position of motorcycle officer would not typically be considered a classification. Rather, it is an assignment in the operating department. Motorcycle officer would have civil service classification of police officer. The job assignment, whether beat cop, motorcycle officer, crime investigator, does not affect the civil service classification or standing. There are circumstances in which the system may provide for the appointment of personnel to positions that are outside the classified service. For example, the legislature, by another set of laws in 2002, was amended to permit certain cities to create positions in an unclassified service. The positions that the legislation authorized as unclassified include assistant chief, deputy chief, bureau commander, administrative assistant, or administrative secretary. Similar to the provision of the city of the county service statute. So if a position is initially selected by a police chief to be an unclassified service, and it is in classified service at the time of the selection of the position that this individual is If that person is in the classified service, the employee occupying the position has a right to turn to the next highest position or a like position in the classified civil service when he's finished doing his job that was outside of the civil service. Flexibility. The civil service is created by a city or a town. Is not required to be identical to the system described by the state so long as the city or the town system substantially accomplishes the purposes of the state law. For example, a state Supreme Court decision provides that a new employee can be selected from the top three names on the civil service list, even though the state law says that only the top name can be selected. So there can be differences, and that's where the civil service comes in, right? Because they're the ones who put those three up there. But anyway, counties are without flexibility afforded to cities and towns in the creation of the civil service system. County systems must conform to all the specific provisions. The purpose of the civil service is created pursuant to the state law. It's to provide for promotion on the basis of merit. It's to give police officers tenure, and it's to provide for a civil service commission to administer the system and to investigate by a public hearing removals, suspensions, demotions, discharges, by the appointing power to determine whether such action was or was not made for political or religious reasons, or whether it was not made in good faith or for good cause. So, scope of coverage. Civilians, local variations in the types of employees covered by civil service system is not generally accepted. And it cites a Teamsters suit. But for the police officers, since it's a requirement, the Teamsters don't object. And actually, the police chief pointed out to me the other day that they have a different union. It's kind of on with the Teamsters, but it's their own separate classification, and I imagine it's probably to take care of this issue. There, the court held that the exclusion of non-commissioned civilian members of the police department from the Civil Service Commission, from the civil service system, was invalid. Commissions should generally defer to enabling legislation of the local government on this issue. And then there's a scope of coverage for chiefs. A city or town may deny civil service status for any fire chief appointed after July 1st, 1987, or for any chief of police appointed after July 1st, 1987. If the police department includes six or more commissioned officers, and those commissioned officers have to be full-time. Prior legislation allowing cities to exempt the position of the chief from civil service was ruled in 1988 that the city's effort to exclude the position of the chief of police violated the part of the chapter 41 of the RCW. The decision did not analyze the particular thing, though. They just made a generalized ruling, so it's like a declaratory judgment. Where did we hear that before? So then there are also exempt assignments. As you know, in the law, there's always exemptions. This is so the county sheriff civil service has long provided for a certain number of exempt personnel, and the state civil service exempts nearly all the top four or five levels of department administration from the application of the state personnel system. City fire chiefs are subject to Chapter 41 of the RCW, and police chiefs 41.08, and police chiefs is 41.12 of the RCW, were permitted to be exempt from the civil services. Chapter 143, Laws of 2002. The initial selection for positions to be held in unclassified service and therefore exempt from civil service are to be made by the police chief. The chief then notifies the Civil Service Commission of the selection of an unclassified position. Civil Service Commission has no jurisdiction to review or approve the chief's designation. Subsequent changes in the designation of positions not in the unclassified service are subject to the approval of the city administration and the Civil Service Commission after an open meeting. Persons with regular standing in a lower classification prior to appointment to an unclassified position are provided with return rights, as I had read before. Police departments, cities and towns are required to have a civil service system whenever the police force includes fully paid police officers. And then there's something about fire departments, it doesn't, and counties, it doesn't apply. And more firefighters, it doesn't apply. And so I think this is the conclusion of this. While the courts have acknowledged that the local authority granted by these two statutes for the fire and the police, the courts have not hesitated to scrutinize with a certain zealousness the particulars of the system. There's discussions concerning the period of probation and comments to the rule 11 and discussions in rule 3 that we'll come to by and by and comments to rule 10. Because the courts have looked at the particulars of the system instead of the system in total, the cities must also be cautious in the adoption of rules that vary substantially from the outline provided by the state statute. This approach tends to inhibit creativity and innovation in system improvements and development. It's recommended that commissioners who are seeking through innovative methods to accomplish the three purposes of civil service as discussed in this document, the purpose and the foundations for such programs, and in order to educate reviewing court or elucidate a reviewing court. So they want you to take that in mind and to pay close attention to the law, which is one of the reasons why I'm reading this DiGiulio thing, because he's going to go through all the law. And I think that we've had enough civil service for tonight. What do you think? Did our first 4 points match up with the...
Closely.
Closely.
Closely. There are just a few things that are different. But...
I'm going to elucidate. Or did you make
number one was, you said only police. Number two, the one you were reading said charter, and the end was different.
Okay.
Number three said shall be. Number four said shall not.
Okay, so you're going to keep those notes. And the other thing that I have to tell you, well, in this part, I looked and checked. There is also an appendix update to this document. So we'll have to look at those stuff where that stuff applies, but we'll ferret that out when we get to it.
Okay, thank you.
So, item three. So item three, resolution regarding dismissal of the Edelman lawsuit. And I want to be really sure that we understand we're not discussing the merits of the Edelman lawsuit, just the dismissal of it. And let's see. One of the issues about this that actually Robin Taylor brought up is that the effect of not defending against this lawsuit is that then the lawsuit can win by default. And that's why it was so important that we have an answer to the lawsuit.
I did, excuse me, but I didn't say that. I didn't even indicate that.
No, that's not what I meant.
Okay.
I'm not putting words in your mouth. I wouldn't do that. You speak up well for yourself, Mrs. Taylor.
Okay.
Do you have anything to
say? I feel this clarifies the need to be open and transparent and consistent with the Open Public Meetings Act whenever possible. There was a proper way for the council to take a public vote on this, and unfortunately, instead, decisions were made without our knowledge. And the resolution speaks to this issue. And Councilmember Morgan, I don't know whether you're going to read that out or not. So
I think we've read it out.
Okay.
I think we've read it out. And I did look up one of Attorney Morris's case sightings that she based her comments on this. About, and that case was a case that had to do with the Open Public Meetings Act. It was a case in Spokane where the mayor of Spokane hired a supporter who happened to be an attorney as special counsel for herself personally. And in the end, because she was hiring that person, that counsel for herself personally, the court found that she's allowed to do that. I'm not sure how that has any bearing on our case at all.
Okay. So
number three is this resolution. Oh, well, we should vote on this, shouldn't we? Have you got any feelings about what we want to do about this, Councilmember Tucker?
No, I think I would move to keep it in committee at this time.
Okay. So, and I will second that. We're having a good chance that we will have new legal representation for the city soon, and I think we need to keep this in committee because I think that we do. So that's a resolution about the legality of the quorum council standing committees.
Again, this issue is clear in the law. The new committees make more of the city's work more transparent, and the resolution speaks for itself.
I agree, and I will move this time that we keep this in committee for the same reason as we need to keep the last one in committee, because I don't like to infringe upon a new lawyer, whoever that happens to be, prerogatives and thoughts on the subject. We've certainly heard plenty from the lawyer we've already got.
Okay, I would second.
Okay, so we're holding that. Okay, so proper noticing of council agendas.
We have this item five.
On the list.
Clearly, the public benefits when we put the agenda on the website prior to the meeting. If a council member sends in an item to the council for first reading, it must be added to the council agenda. According to Council Rules 2.2, items should be sent in 9 days ahead of a regular council meeting. Know that it says should and not must. If items are sent after that, they may be declined to be heard by the council. Note that it says council and not mayor. Therefore, it is expected that notifying the clerk a few days ahead of the meeting, if necessary, to add a resolution title to an upcoming agenda is perfectly fine. Under the old council rules, the mayor often sent out late revisions to the council agenda. The best thing is for the public to know what to expect. The council should not be forced to modify the agenda at the meeting when there was every opportunity to post the council's agenda ahead of time. So I don't know if you want to read this out or not. Did you want to read this resolution out, or are we?
Oh, does anybody want to hear it? Have you heard it enough?
Heard it enough.
The one thing I will say is this May that we talked about, I marked it on here, and I need to mark this other one when I find it. The January 21st, it's not May 21st meeting.
Okay.
Okay. So then, number six, resolution establishing policies.
Well, Councilmember Morgan, what is your feeling on holding this and moving it forward?
Thank you for reminding me. We need to hold that also. Let's see. Yeah, we need to hold this also. For clarity from our from our new council.
Okay. I would second that then.
We should be getting soup. Okay, so then it's the resolution establishing policies regarding the city newsletter and communications to the public. And I have a letter here that I need to share with Pat and then I would like to read out because...
Well, thank you, Councilmember Morgan.
This is a letter that I got when I sent a question in to MRSC. My question was, I was like that, read like this. I'm aware that the direct politics, such as advocating voting a certain way, are completely off limits for a publicly financed city publication. I'm looking for guidance on publications such as the city newsletter or website. Where is the line regarding impugning the motives such as and taking positions against the policies of political opponents and outright false statements? In this case, one branch of our city government directly attacked another branch of the government in a city publication, and this was not marked as an opinion piece. It was written as a factual piece. Can you help me?
Okay, so this was your question.
That was my question.
And this went, and you gave this to
somebody named Paul Sullivan from MRSC writes back. The only statute that applies, and the one that you make reference to, is RCW 42.17A and 555, which states in part, no elected official nor any employee of his or her office, nor any person appointed to or employed by any public office or agency may use or authorize the use of the facilities of a public office or agency directly or indirectly for the purpose of assisting a campaign for election of any person to any office or for the promotion of or opposition to any ballot position. When I was assigned your inquiry, I looked at the latest city newsletter, which I assume was the publication involved with your question. As far as I can see, the mayor's article does not relate to any current election campaign, either for an office or a ballot proposition. That being the case, the article would not come under the state statute. From a legal standpoint, the mayor or any other city official may state his or her position on issues involving the city, and he or she may challenge statements or positions taken by others. Obviously, if any person libels or slanders someone, then he is subject to a civil lawsuit and possible damages. But the making of statements challenging the actions or motives of others are likely within a person's First Amendment rights and part of the general political process. That said, it may well be that statements in an official city publication may violate rules that have been adopted as to the content of the publication. I don't have access to what rules or limits that may apply to your city's newsletter, if there are any. If there are rules, I'm not sure what penalties might apply to a violation. My guess, though, is that there are no rules nor penalties for violations. But that is something that you might check on. If there are no rules, the council might want to develop some in the future. So it appears to me that it is very likely little that can be done. The council, of course, can discuss the article and express its own opinions regarding the issues at hand and whether the newspaper is an appropriate vehicle for such opinions. And then, I think I'll leave the whereases on the page, but now, therefore, the City Council of the City of Black Diamond, Washington does resolve as follows. It is the policy of the City of Black Diamond that all city communications to the public shall be factual and informative. Advocacy of controversial positions are to be avoided, and care shall be taken to make sure that alternative viewpoints are fairly presented. The city's quarterly newspaper shall reflect the activities and perspectives of the mayor and council equally. In order to implement this policy, the city's newsletter shall be subject to the approval of both the mayor and the council president. The city's newsletter for the third quarter shall include a copy of this resolution. I'm sure that we can't probably make that happen. However, I guess I'd like to move that we hold this also, because I can see that it would be good to have the opinion of another legal opinion on the subject.
Okay, I'll second that.
You'll second that? Okay. So the next thing that we had was a discussion regarding the truck traffic through town, which is a special concern on Roberts Drive for a number of reasons. The main reason being the one day that I came into town and from the Green River coming up the Auburn Highway, there were 40 double trailer trucks just on Roberts Drive, coming and going both. And they were going over our little tiny 100-year-old bridge. Every road engineer that I've talked to has said that it's going to be a problem if that much is happening. I followed them, those trucks, that day. I followed them, and it must just be the season, I think. But those trucks that day were going over to the Ravensdale landfill across from Silica Sands. And I looked them up on the website, and they can receive 200 trucks a day of these double-deckers, and then there was also the side-tipper ones. And I've been on the other side, and I've come up Maple Valley Highway a couple of times, and it seemed to me like it was taking way more truck traffic as well. And like I say, when I followed them and went over to Ravensdale, that's true, that's where they were going. I also had followed a couple trucks from Green Valley Road from the gravel pit, also going over to the Ravensdale landfill. So I know that that's happening. And then just in the last few days, there's been truck traffic going in and out of Palmer Coking Coal as well, making the loop, actually.
Well, Councilmember Morgan, I am glad that you took the initiative to look into this, and I know you've asked for more information about the truck hauling on Roberts Drive.
I have a few questions that I have asked, and I did get some answer. This is about the Palmer Coking Coal trucks. I think there's only one answer here. The question was, has the city been notified by Palmer Coking Coal of additional truck traffic on Roberts Drive? Answer, no. Has the city done any pavement projects or road repairs in the last year on Roberts Drive near Highway 169 or on Highway 169 at the intersection of Roberts Drive? And if so, why? And he answers me, we have done some pothole repair at various places all along Roberts Drive. We've ground four major asphalt humps that form where asphalt meets concrete and makes a bump over time from the truck traffic. We have had additional costs of shoulder maintenance due to increased truck traffic. We had a bad pothole that opened up on the curb line of the westbound lane about 150 feet west of 169 on Roberts Drive. We think that the trucks are veering to the right to avoid the eastbound trucks that were over the center line getting ready to turn left onto 169, and the eastbound trucks try to straighten up to the 169, and sometimes their trailer is over the center line, which forces the westbound trucks off the road and bouncing along the curb. So evidently, he's aware of...
Councilmember Morgan, could you please say who he is?
He is Seth Botcher.
Okay, thank you.
He is Seth Botcher. And I'm just... I'm thinking, and I need to do a little bit more research, I'm thinking that, as I recall, when the bridge was closed, the school buses were going over that Roberts Drive Bridge and down the hill and up to Enumclaw through the valley. And as I recall, the city got some financial consideration, let's put financial consideration for the road. One of the things that happens, these roads that are state and county roads that are inside the municipal boundary, the county and the state both call those orphan roads, because it's like everybody's trying to divorce the responsibility of taking care of them. And I'm just thinking that maybe it would be worthwhile going a little bit further into that to see where those trucks are going and what's going on, and see what can be done about it. So, and then I had also asked about the ones on truck traffic to Ravensdale. So one has, the city been notified in the last year by King County or Ravensdale Reserve Silica Fill Site of any expected additional truck traffic on the Auburn Black Diamond Road? And the Auburn Black Diamond and the Black Diamond Ravensdale Road, or 169 as it goes through town. And the answer, Mr. Botch's answer, is no, we haven't. We've noticed an increase in the number of trucks coming through town on Roberts Drive from areas west of the city. Recently, it has dropped off, and we don't know exactly why. Our police department did have a truck emphasis a while ago, and that might have diverted some trucks. And does everybody understand what truck emphasis is? That's when they go out and weigh the trucks and make sure they're within the... It's a hassle for the drivers. So two, many jurisdictions established haul routes for trucks. Has the city established any haul routes? And if so, what are they? Are there any trip or weight limits that apply? And Seth answers, the city does not have designated truck routes. The city has restricted trucks on all streets except 169, Lawson Street, and Roberts Drive. Of course, local deliveries and trucks exiting the Palmer Pit are exempt. See also, there's an exception in municipal code, I think this is municipal code, 10.12.020, that the city has recently installed the no truck signs on Jones Lake and Morgan Street, as trucks were recently starting to cut through, and that problem has now been averted. Southeast 288th Street was added as a no-truck route when the Green River Bridge was out, and the city was trying to hold the street together until it could get it overlaid. Now that the entire length of Southeast 288th Street in the city has been overlaid and the bridge is open, we can take the truck traffic just fine. Trucks never use this road much anyway. Currently, the road has been signed, and therefore the truck restriction has not been in, and currently the road has not been signed and the truck restriction has not been enforced on 288. We do not have the option of preventing all trucks from moving east and west through our city. And then it says, note that the city does use the registered gross weight to restrict trucks so that weighing the truck and load is not necessary. State legal limit per axle still apply for trucks on Roberts Drive, Lawson Street, and 169. And I'm just thinking that we need to, I'll be pursuing that with a few more things and talking to a few more engineers, because I'm particularly worried about the bridge over Rock Creek. And I wouldn't be so worried, but I saw a real similar bridge, same vintage, up north along 405 when there was sliding a little earlier this year. And the dirt slid away, and it turns out that that's a cement bridge with possibly a little rebar that's sticking out here and there on our bridge as it is, but underneath the main foundation of the bridge is pilings that have been in the ground for the 100 years. And I'm looking to see if I can find any county information on this particular bridge. I know that they were going around and doing earthquake preparedness and stuff on all the bridges, but that bridge probably doesn't count too heavily. So, but I imagine that somewhere someone's at least taken some kind of a cursory look at it. So I think it'd be behoove us to have that in our lexicon of issues. And one of the things that we need to consider is, you know, we don't have a comprehensive plan finished. And because we don't have a comprehensive plan finished, we might have to look for other help for things like that bridge to maintain it in order to have the money to do it.
Councilmember Morgan, can the city require any road improvements because of the truck traffic?
Well, we need to look into that. We need to look into that. And the way it's been done in the past, I think, has been through, what did I call it just a minute ago in the school?
Orphan roads.
Well, they're orphan roads, but it's like a mitigation. It's like a financial consideration for the hardship. And there's probably a way to get somebody to pay attention to that if one is persistent enough. So I guess that brings us to our last item, which is to talk about what our next meeting is. And we have some suggestions for...
The next meeting is Thursday, April 28th, 6:30 p.m. And it looks like we're adding, we have a good suggestion in the beginning here.
Anything near gravity that we should maybe take up first? I have like fire response for the town. Where the new fire station is going to be, I don't think that we really have a whole lot to say about that actually. And how to fund it. And another thing that we need to do, probably the first thing to do, you know, is to take a look at the fire at the fire plan.
The ad hoc committees.
Committees on fire plan. And Mrs. Taylor?
Yes.
Since you've been following this, have you got a preference?
For
where we should start a discussion about the fire? Or you could call me later sometime.
I can get back to you on that.
Okay. I said, the chief said we should take a look at his plan, the ad hoc fire plan. I think that maybe is the best sense.
I think if you start there,
uh-huh,
that's a good place to start, at least for your own education.
Right. Okay.
That'll show you why they recommended annexation.
okay. over the other venues of providing fire services.
Okay. And you guys, you said you guys were talking about the pre-annexation stuff a little bit?
Yes, that's what they've been talking about, yeah.
There hasn't been a timeline, was there?
Well, I don't know. That's not a question for me.
Okay.
So that would be a question for Chief.
Okay.
Are you entertaining a motion to adjourn?
I would entertain a motion, yes.
I'd like to adjourn this meeting.
All right. Me too. Okay, go home, guys.
Okay, slide, hold button down until the power is off.